Greetings and salutations. I am Raymond Jetson, Chief Executive Catalyst at Metromorphosis. Welcome to our bi-monthly podcast, where we intend to engage you in important, thought-provoking, and action-inducing conversation. As is the case with our work here at Metromorphosis, this podcast has a decidedly urban perspective. We are concerned with the world of the city, especially the inner city. Welcome to Urban Renewal. And so welcome again to the Urban Renewal Podcast. I am so thankful for your joining us here and these really important conversations that are hopefully stimulating in so many different ways. This month, we begin to unpack this whole notion of the village renewed. And so what does it mean to renew the village and why is it so important? We have heard so very often that it takes a village to raise a child. But what does it take to build a healthy village? Because only a healthy village can raise healthy children. And what we believe here at Metromorphosis is that this notion of the village is so important because no single entity, no single organization, no single person can transform the village alone. It's about partnerships. It's about people who are on the ground doing the work. And today I am so excited to have with me my dear friend Jay Daniels, who is the executive director at the East Baton Rouge Housing Authority and the chief operating officer at Partners Southeast. Jay is an experienced developer and operator of sustainable communities that provide exceptional living experiences to all residents. But more important than that, he is someone who is actively engaged in restoring the village. Jay, welcome to the Urban Renewal Podcast.
Raymond, thank you. I think we ended right there. That was an excellent introduction.
Well, thank you very much, my friend. So before we dive into some of the important work that you are part of and you are leading in our community, can you give us just the brief version of the journey that brought you to Baton Rouge and where you are right now?
Wow, that's a tall order. You know, obviously, my success is not due to my own merit. I like to think that that was a village that raised me, that allowed me to be here before you today. I'm a native of Beaumont, Texas. I spent 23 years in Atlanta, Georgia. The way I arrived at Atlanta, Georgia, I went to Morehouse College. When I went to Our Mother Mercy Catholic School as a kindergartner in Beaumont, Texas, we were going through Black History Month. And my teacher just off the cuff commented that Dr. King went to Morehouse College. And as my mother tells it, I came home excited and said, "Mom, I'm going to Morehouse." And so from that point on, it was Morehouse or bust. My mom was a high school counselor. So for my mom to watch me not put in not one application, as she advised all her other students to put in at least 10, I was like, no, I am Morehouse or bust. And so I got that acceptance letter, went to Morehouse, changed my life. Being in Atlanta, being in that environment of Black excellence, totally changed my life. And so from my first day of arrival in Atlanta, Georgia, the individuals that took me into their village promised me a better life as long as I listened to them, followed them, and heeded their instructions, which is how I arrived here today. Met my beautiful wife in Atlanta. We are both working in affordable housing. We had some kids, got married, and she says, "Time to go back home to Baton Rouge." And so here I am in front of you.
And the Housing Authority, how did that unfold? And Partner Southeast, how did that unfold for you?
Sure. So, again, going back to my experiences as a young college student, I thought I wanted to be an architect my entire life. And so that was a young man at the architectural firm that was also working there. And he had advised me to apply my architectural skill to real estate development. That way I'll have the most impact. Quite frankly, what he said, if you do not own your own architectural firm, you're going to be designing bathrooms just like me. So it scared me. So at that point, I went and changed my major to finance at Morehouse. He was like, understand the numbers, understand the capabilities you have as a burgeoning architect, and then apply that to real estate development. That way you are creating communities as opposed to designing them. And so I enrolled in some real estate classes at Morehouse. Again, we talk about the village. Morehouse is that village. It's a small institution of roughly 3,000 young men who are committed to excellence, who have the expectation of being excellent, and the expectation that you have to change the world. So that environment in itself put me in a framework is that I have to achieve. I have to be able to change the world. And so once I came upon my senior year, I was faced with, do I go into the corporate world or do I go and, you know, pursue my own entrepreneurial endeavors? And that's exactly what I did. And so the first neighborhood in which I began to focus my development was the same neighborhood that Dr. King not grew up in, but the same neighborhood in which Dr. King raised his kids in. It was a neighborhood that over time, just like any other city in the U.S. and black community, had saw a decline in disinvestment due to a number of other social determinants in which we tried to address in a strong manner at the Housing Authority. But I felt a over-resounding charge to come and change the neighborhood in which Dr. King chose to raise his kids. And that in itself was a life-changing experience. Because oftentimes when you're faced with change, you don't necessarily, you're not always welcomed. You know, sometimes people are very comfortable in the disinvestment. They're very comfortable in the expectations of individuals not having any expectations of them. And so when you come in and say, you know what, we can do better as a community. We can educate our kids better. We can provide businesses for ourselves in a better fashion in which we are accepting on a daily basis. And so that was a struggle in itself. It taught me, I have the lashes to prove it. And in many instances, while I felt very discouraged, I've also felt at the same time very inspired, because that was my charge, one, as a Morehouse man, because I am expected to change the environments that I see fit. And so those life experiences in Atlanta completely changed my life.
So what do you sense as your charge in your new role with the Housing Authority and Partner Southeast here in Baton Rouge?
Transformation. We are in the season of transformation. And so when I look at Baton Rouge, the same city in which Dr. King came to learn from Reverend Jimerson, the same change that he learned and took back to Atlanta is the same change that I want to bring back here to Baton Rouge. And that change is measurable outcomes related to education, economic opportunities, and health and wellness. Those three key components and social determinants can transform a community, can transform a village.
Education, economic opportunity, and
health and wellness.
So these aren't exactly the types of things that you would typically have someone who leads a local housing authority to talk about. Say more about why you believe that that is so intricately interwoven into your work with the Housing Authority and Partner Southeast.
Sure. Housing isn't just about the sticks and bricks. Housing is about community. If we can go back and listen to and think about the environments and neighborhoods in which we grew up in, it was comprehensive. We had a church nearby. We had our shopping experiences nearby. We had our neighbors nearby. We had our schools nearby. That was the village. And so, as I stated earlier, I'm not a product of my parents, but I'm a product of a village that helped raise me. And so as the CEO of the Housing Authority, we have to go back to the foundations in which we achieved success decades ago. Sometimes I feel as though we've lost our way. We've lost our sense of community and obligation to each other. So as a CEO of a housing authority, we take the fundamental necessity of housing, house them properly, and then at that point, once we give them a quality place to have pride in, we can then talk about some of the social ills, the mixed education system, the health and wellness issues that we have. We can talk about some of the economic opportunities or lack thereof, because the housing authority creates all of those opportunities. If we have the opportunity to place our properties and our communities into strong school districts, then wow, that is an asset to that resident that lives in that community. If we have the opportunity to place our communities in close proximity or access to health and wellness assets within the community, that is an asset and plus for the residents. We can do the same thing as it relates to health and wellness and educational and economic opportunities. If we're developing a $50 million apartment community, why shouldn't one of our residents be a part of that construction process? Why don't they have the opportunity to learn that skill set? If I can talk about, in 1968, Dr. King, along with Andy Young and the leaders in the civil rights movement, they negotiated a clause within the Fair Housing Act called Section 3. And the one thing they recognized with Section 3 is simply said that if I'm going to spend millions of dollars within a public housing community or some type of redevelopment in which federal funds are being devoted to, preference should be given to those individuals at the economic level that should be able to participate in a substantive fashion in the redevelopment of their own community. It's not racial based, it's not gender based, it is economic based. And so those individuals that we represent 12,000 residents within East Baton Rouge Parish. That is the total number of residents that we serve within East Baton Rouge Parish. Those residents should be given an opportunity to thrive. And if we are creating these opportunities on an annual basis, why wouldn't we put them? Why wouldn't we teach a man how to fish, as opposed to just feeding them fish?
Yeah, and that's probably a long-term question that needs to be asked, because Section 3 is probably the most important ignored section of the HUD regulations.
That's right.
In so much development that happens. And so it is absolutely wonderful to hear to hear you put it front and center. And so you bring with you to this position this very, very vibrant, engaging, broad, challenging, transformative perspective on the potential of the housing authority in a community.
That's correct.
And you compare that with a historical perspective of the housing authority gives out Section 8 vouchers and maintains the public housing projects. What has been that intersection of your vision and the historical understanding of housing authority in Baton Rouge? I bet that's been interesting on a day or two.
Well, you're absolutely right. And it starts with the board. We have a very intelligent board, a very visionary board that understands the unlocked potential of a housing authority. Typically, housing authorities have been used as a vessel just to house poor people, not necessarily concerned with the outcomes, not necessarily concerned with how they actually live and they feel and the generational impact. But this board is truly concerned with the outcomes of what we do on a daily basis. And so they have embraced vision, they have embraced innovation, and they want everybody to be able to tell a generational story 20 years from now to talk about what the housing authority changed their lives.
So I have to do it. My last name is Jetson, and so I have been teased about living in the future for so long. Allow me to take you 20 years forward.
Sure.
What is the story that's being told about the housing authority and its impact on the village that is Baton Rouge?
It will be the village. It will be completely ingrained in every aspect of housing, education, economics. When you talk about some of the businesses that will be birthed out of the innovative deliveries that we see from an economic standpoint, when you look at the children that will be the benefactors of an increased and improved educational system as we increase our options that they have for secondary and early education. Health and wellness, understanding that because we created community gardens, because we created access to public transportation that took them to those different health and wellness assets within the community, we will see a healthier community, a smarter community, a more vibrant and sustainable community. That will be Baton Rouge 20 years from now.
And that is a wonderful vision. And taking into consideration even the vision and the passion that you obviously bring to this work, the Housing Authority can't make this happen alone.
Thank you for saying that.
Partner Southeast can't make it happen alone.
Thank you for saying that.
And so what then does the broader community, what do entities like Metromorphosis sure. and other entities in this community who share the earnest compassion for a greater Baton Rouge, what role do they play sure. in supporting the work that you're attempting to make real?
Thank you for saying that, because it comes down with alignment. It comes down to the shared interest that we have as human beings and as citizens of Baton Rouge. When it comes to the different delivery of services, leadership capacity, training, we need all of our nonprofits, all of our interested organizations to help us bring our vision to fruition. We can't do it by ourselves. It goes the old edict. There's a turtle that's on top of a fence. And someone asked the turtle, how did you get there? He said, obviously not by myself. And that is what we want in Baton Rouge. We want to be at a certain level, but we're not going to get there by ourselves. So over the next 12 months, you'll see an intensive outreach to all of our stakeholders, community partners, our public and private sector partners to come together to help serve our residents. And ultimately, what you're going to see is you're going to see a concentric circle, because it's not only going to stop at the 12,000 people that we serve on the House Authority. You're going to see it ring out and get bigger and get bigger and get bigger, because housing affects everybody. Economic, the green dollar affects everybody. Instead of cycling in the back in other communities, we can cycle these dollars right back here in this community. So there's not only a social benefit to what we do, but bringing in partners that might have not typically partnered with us in the past, they will understand not only the social benefit, but also the economic benefit that it will definitely sustain itself over the long term.
Greatest challenge you faced up to date?
I would say the greatest challenge would probably be, as I reach out to community partners, is having them embrace the vision. Sometime when you have been doing a certain thing for so long, not that it's bad or good, it's just the same thing, and realizing that something could be better. Hearing Kissinger once said, the task of a leader is to bring the people where they have not been. And ultimately, that's why I want to bring our people to where they have not been. And so that can take a longer process than you would normally think, because you like, in many cases, we have an opportunity to shift the paradigm from an economic standpoint. And so those companies who, for whatever reason, may have not wanted to do business with us in the past, we have opportunities. And so we have to do a better job of messaging, of talking about what we do, and saying why it makes sense to be a part of the East Baton Rouge Parish Housing Authority family.
You talked about the 12,000 people that you serve with the Housing Authority, and you talked, for example, Jay, about the tremendous opportunity that Section 3 provides, and this vision around education, economic opportunity, and health and wellness. Say a bit about how you engage that community within this community so that they are best positioned to embrace the opportunities that emerge from their lives.
Sure. So from the business community standpoint, or the actual residents themselves?
The 12,000.
So one, we have to have them understand what the opportunities are. You know, for so long, they haven't been afforded the access to the information, which creates the platform for them to participate. And so we have to do a better job of communicating what those opportunities are. If I'm building a $50 million community, why wouldn't I tell them, hey, here are the opportunities? And if I'm afforded an opportunity to a majority company or a larger company that's going to be building that, my job is to advocate on their behalf. It's to say, Mr. General Contractor, I have 12,000 people within my system. Can you carve out job opportunities for these individuals? They're able-bodied. They want to work. They're highly educated. Please make a spot for them. Now, as partners, you would think that, you know, they would say, okay. Sometimes that cost-benefit analysis doesn't make sense to some of our partners. And again, that's our job, to advocate on behalf of our residents, to tell them why it makes sense. To tell them, I give you a good story. When I was working in Charlotte, the Charlotte Housing Authority, we had a $13 million project. The contractor was a majority firm. The contractor was a majority firm that had never embraced Section 3 before. And so that was a learning process that we had to teach them. I presented them with legitimate applicants within our public housing system. At the end of the project, they hired three of our residents who actually lived in the community in which we were redeveloping. Again, the spirit of Section 3. At the end of the project, they came back and said, Jay, thank you for enlightening us. We had no idea that we had those type of people living in these units. They were the best workers we've ever had on any of our jobs. They arrived there before anybody else, and they were the last ones to leave. They had keys to the job site and protected the job site as if it was their own. Well, it was theirs. So they took pride. So we talk about pride of community, pride of ownership. Again, we have to advocate for our people. We have to speak for those who have no voice for themselves. And so that is our job as housing advocates, as housing practitioners, to tell the greater community, we have people who can work for you. Now, are they gonna come here with all the skills that you normally would see on resumes? No, in some cases, no. But how is it gonna hurt you to help them attain those skills for the betterment of this Baton Rouge community? And so that's what we have to do. We have to do a better job of communicating those opportunities, not only for and on behalf of our residents, but also to the greater business community that's out there as well.
So what is the next big thing that will happen? What should we expect to see as the next big thing that begins or furthers this transformation of our understanding of public housing here in Baton Rouge?
Access. Access. We're going to roll out a platform called Access. And what Access is going to do is going to completely reposition the public housing of Baton Rouge.
How so? Are you keeping that under wraps? Or
Yes, because we haven't completely rolled it out. So sometime in June and July, it will be a community rollout, because the community is going to own this. Going back to what you said earlier, we cannot do it by ourselves. And it will take a community effort to make this platform a success. Again, this particular platform will ensure that our residents have measurable outcomes in education, economic opportunities, health and wellness. And those benefits are not only going to stop at this core 12,000, it is going to affect the greater Baton Rouge community, where everybody has an opportunity to participate, both on the social benefit and economic benefit. The pie is about to get a lot bigger. And want everybody to come in and help us achieve our goals.
So on the other side of that microphone are all of the people and resources that you need to make this vision real. Tell them something.
This is our opportunity. This is the season for change. We've talked about what a great city that we want. We've talked about what we want to be. We've traveled to other capital cities and said, how come we can't be like them? Here's our opportunity. We have the resources here. Right now, we are poised to secure a $30 million grant from HUD, Choice Neighborhoods. Again, creating over $300 million in economic activity for this city. Why not be a part of transformation? Why not be a part of this season of transformation? So we welcome you to partner with us. We welcome you to come down, sit, and talk with us. I'm available. I'm accessible. Come and talk to us. We have a great story to tell. In 20 years from now, when all of us are sitting around talking about 20 years ago, do you remember when? And when we look out in our skyline, when we look at all these well-educated young men that's going to be born and soon to be born, and they're in college or soon to be graduating from college, we say, you know what? See, you know what? They grew up in our community. They are a product of us. 20 years ago, we set up a narrow channel of success, and they traveled that channel, and here they are. This is what's going to make Baton Rouge great. And I'm excited to be a part of it.
And Jay Daniel, on behalf of the Metromorphosis team and the larger Baton Rouge community, we're glad you are a part of it also.
Thank you.
We're thankful for your leadership. And as you already know, the Metromorphosis team stands ready to stand beside you and to do whatever lifting we can, because we share your vision and we share your passion. And so I am so thankful that you are the CEO of the East Baton Rouge Parish Housing Authority and the Chief Operating Officer for Partner Southeast. And shall we dance?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. It's going to be a wonderful ride. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. It is my sincere hope that you have found today's discussion to be important, thought-provoking, and action-inducing. So much so that you will continue to share with us on a regular basis and pass the word to your network. For more information on this podcast, you can go to www.metromorphosis.net. If you've enjoyed the podcast, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Overcast. Leave a rating and a review while there. This podcast was produced by Parachute.fm and Sharita Harrison. The show music was created by Jay Kale. Thank you for becoming a part of Urban Renewal. I'm Raymond Jetson. Until next time.